The Breakfast Huddle replay from Money FM 89.3.
Money FM 89.3. Good morning. It's the Breakfast Huddle. Elliot Danka, Manisha Tank, and Ryan Huang on this first trading day of December.
Yes.
As always, we get a bit of a look back on November. Now, if we're talking news headlines, what stood out for you, Manisha?
It's been a really serious month. Well, it's the most recent headline that's come from London. Mm. So this just about made it into November. This was the London Bridge attack.
Friday or Saturday morning, right?
Yes. Yeah. Sadly, this was a video of the attack was actually sent to me on WhatsApp. And this is one of the worrying features now of how we get our news. But to see that attack on London Bridge, there were two things that struck me. The first thing that struck me was London is still susceptible to these sorts of attacks. But the second thing that struck me was how quickly it was under control. Mm. So there were members of the public who stepped in. Someone who was a plainclothes police officer, transport officer, was able to get the weapon from this guy. Somebody used one of those sort of fire hydrant things to destabilize this attacker.
Yeah.
So it was the sort of resilience, the understanding, the fact that Londoners are able to handle this. But also it puts Boris Johnson back in the frame. Mm. He's got the NATO summit happening this week and he's sort of having to talk about terror again. But yes, unfortunately, it was a sad story, but that was the one that stuck in my mind for November.
It's really been a bit of a topsy-turvy November. Ryan, you've got a conversation with our guest this morning, David Kaur, co-founder of The Smart Investor. I just want to turn our attention to David. David, good morning, by the way, and happy belated birthday.
Do you know, you reach a certain age where you try and forget your birthdays? You know,
which age was
40
that
for me? 40.
Yeah. Very good for
you. So I'm 40. Still 40. Yeah.
Very good. What news headline stood out for you in November?
It was the Black Friday sales. You know, I was caught in the Black Friday traffic on Orchard Road.
Okay.
Right. The number of people going into the shops.
Massive.
Yeah. And all those people who say that bricks and mortar is dead are completely wrong, aren't they? Because the number of people that were going into the shops that day just to go and pick up bargains.
Yeah. So, you know, Robinson's had people camping out from 4 a.m.
Was
and
it
from the previous,
was it you, Manny?
I was here working. No, but they were not just 4 a.m. We had people camping out from the night before.
I know.
That's that much enthusiasm.
So it just goes to show, you know, that bricks and mortar is still alive and well. And all this talk about, you know, everybody shopping on the internet. I'm sure the internet will do fine, but I think you need both. If you're a retailer, you need to be both online and offline.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're going to miss out on people like me who like to do my bricks and mortar shopping.
Smart move. For me, I mean, you talked about getting stuck in Orchard Road. What stood out for me in the month of November was the sort of press conference for this Tesla Cybertruck.
Mm.
I would love to be spotted in a Cybertruck.
This would help me get through the roads.
Yeah, it would, with my armor-proof window. Oh, what stood out for you, Ryan?
All right, what stood out for me, another of our negative headlines, relatively, is the siege in the Hong Kong Polytechnic University. So, you know, you're getting images of students with arrows, with flames around, you know, the arrowheads, and petrol bombs numbering over 5,000 found in the universities. So all that really weighed on the sentiment in Hong Kong, right? We saw the Hang Seng Index down by 2.1%. So not a great month for markets in Hong Kong. If you look at the STI, not super good as well. It lost 35 points or 1.1%. David, I'm going to take November, right? How would you sum it up for Singapore? Was it something you think will turn around as we head into December?
You know, I think when you look at Singapore, it just goes to show how dependent Singapore is on the rest of the world. And Singapore cannot live in isolation. And I want to extend that to sort of say that many countries cannot exist in isolation anymore. We are an interconnected world, which therefore means that, you know, at the beginning of the year, we were talking about synchronized growth. That synchronized growth is still kind of there at the moment, although it has moderated somewhat as a result of the trade war. But the sooner this trade war is resolved, I think the sooner we can start moving forward, because we don't really want to sort of see this conflict between the two biggest economies in the world affecting the rest of us, because we are affected to some extent, Ryan.
Mm. So zooming in on some of the losers, right, we mentioned the STI was down by 1.1%. Leading the top of the list was Jardine CNC, Sucker and Carriage. That has quite a bit of exposure to the Indonesian market, of course. Are we seeing this bottom out in terms of second carriage?
Well, you know, the Jardine Cycle and Carriage results surprised me a little because I would have thought that Jardine C&C would do better than it had. But the problem, I think, with Jardine C&C is that it is very focused on the automotive industry, the car industry. And right now there is a lot of competition in the car industry, and that has affected Jardine C&C through its conglomerate Astra. So maybe sort of give it a little while. We'll see how things pan out in the next 6 months. And by the way, I do own shares in Jardine C&C, which is why you see that I'm a little bit disappointed right now.
Okay, hopefully it turns around in December.
Not a great birthday present for me, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ascendas REIT is down 6%. What's your take on Ascendas? We've got, of course, Ascendas in the news because of their recent M&A activity.
Yep.
So it's looking like it's down due to a rights issue recently.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, if you have a rights issue, you do expect the shares to fall slightly because, I mean, the rights were discounted. And I think as far as Ascendas is concerned, it also highlights, you know, one of the issues for many Singapore companies. And that is that we've reached the point where it is very difficult for many of these companies to continue to grow within Singapore. So Ascendas is turning its sights to America. It wants to expand overseas. And that is something that I think we will see increasingly more and more amongst the Straits Times Index companies. They will need to look overseas in order to generate that revenue and profits growth for shareholders.
Okay, and one more I'm looking at a list of losers is Sembcorp Industries, down 4.4%. Of course, you remember Sembcorp in the news as well due to the speculated merger of the marine and offshore assets between them and Keppel Corp. But now it's one of the top losers. What's going on?
Well, if you're in the marine industry, you expect to be sort of affected somewhat, you know, because the offshore marine sector is not doing particularly well. And so therefore, it's not entirely surprising that Sembcorp Industries is performing less well than expected. But having said that, it is also heavily involved in the utility sector. And that side, you know, I think will continue to do well. So that is the price you pay for being a conglomerate. Some parts will do well, some parts may not do well.
Okay. We'll keep an eye out for that. We're chatting with David Kuo, co-founder of The Smart Investor. And David, looking at some of the top winners for November, I'm looking at Wilmer, up 9.1%. So really bucking the trend that we saw in STI, which was down by 1.1%.
Yeah, well, this is what happens when you are involved in the agricultural business. If certain sectors are doing well, in particular things like palm oil and the oil business and the tropical oil business, then of course Wilmer will do well. But the other thing about Wilmer is that it has suggested that it has hinted that it may float off one of its companies in China and IPO that company in China, which would therefore sort of be of benefit to shareholders. So that's one of the reasons why Wilmer has done well in November.
Okay, I'm just looking at Yangzhijiang Shipbuilding. It's up 7.9%. Yangzhijiang, one of the most active stocks in the past month. What can you tell us about Yangzhijiang?
Well, Yangzhijiang said that orders for ships had fallen this year. So that was part of the reason why people were a little bit concerned about Yangzhijiang. But having said that, in the shipping industry now, things are happening. Many of the ships have to be environmentally friendly. So therefore, it means that they won't be able to burn high sulfur content fuels. And so in the case of Yangzhijiang, it says that once these companies start to think about renewing their ships, then of course it will do well. And I think, you know, people are betting on the future rather than looking at what has been happening in the past.
Okay, and just to wrap things up, David, we've got the Golden Agri Resources up by 4.9%. So this is the third top gainer for the month of November. Where does this go from here? I'm looking at profits from a recent quarter helping to support prices?
Well, yeah. And if you remember, the last time I was on, I said that Golden Agri has turned into one of the, one of the punters' favorites on the stock market, simply because the share price is quite low and you only have to sort of move that share price by 1 or 2 cents and you will actually sort of get quite exceptional, quite disproportionate gains in the percentages. But I think in the case of Golden Agri, it's not that bad a company. And again, you know, because it's exposed to the agricultural sector, tropical oils are doing well, so therefore Golden Agri had a good November.
Okay, profits were up 53%,
yes,
and revenue was down by 11%. So that was a quarter for Golden Agri. We are chatting with David Kuo, the co-founder of The Smart Investor.
It's a really busy week. We've got that NATO summit happening in London, OPEC meetings, non-farm payrolls on Friday. So what do you make of all of that?
Well, you know, I think people need to be more aware about environmental impacts on companies now.
Yeah.
Mark Carney, the current governor of the Bank of England, will be the ambassador for climate change. And I think people need to be aware of what is going on. I think there will be increasing amounts of pressure being put on companies by shareholders saying, how environmentally friendly are you? Mm. And I think that shareholders may hold companies to account by saying that if you're not environmentally friendly, because this is going to be affecting our lives, if you are not environmentally friendly, we are not going to be investing in you. Yeah. And I noticed that you over here at Singapore Press Holdings has got rid of your bottled waters, which I think, you know, is absolutely great. We do need to actually sort of hold companies such as SPH to account and sort of say that on the one hand, you want to be environmentally friendly, but are you really sort of walking the walk?
It's no longer a case of this is something trendy, this is something we can put a PR spin onto it.
Yeah.
What you're saying, essentially, it's become a measure of the success of a company now, a measure of operations in that sense.
Yeah, you know, about sort of 10, 20 years ago, people saw environmentalists as people being a bit geeky, people being, you know, tree huggers, people who walk around, you know, sort of wearing sandals and stuff. But it's no longer like that, because I think people are beginning to understand that climate change is real. When you start getting things like super hurricanes, when you start seeing sea levels rising, when you see pictures of the icebergs over in Greenland melting, you suddenly realize that this is really serious stuff. And when the United Nations starts to warn countries and companies and saying, you've got to stop these coal-fired power stations now, because it is affecting all of us.
Yeah, I'm glad that you raised fossil fuels, because we've got this OPEC meeting coming up. But there's so much conversation around the oil industry having to embrace the fact that the climate emergency is here.
Well, you know, British Petroleum changed its name to BP, and now it's saying that BP stands for Beyond Petroleum. They want to go beyond petroleum. They want to be seen as an environmentally friendly company. And many of these previous oil giants are looking at things like solar power. I noticed recently that Shell is installing charge points for electric cars in the UK. They have to change, because ultimately people like us are going to say, we don't really want this anymore. Yeah. We don't want to sort of, we only have one Earth ultimately, yeah? I mean, if we don't live here, where are we going to live, Manisha? I mean, where are we going to live?
Yeah.
Any expectations for Friday's non-farm payroll numbers?
Well, I think it's going to be another set of good numbers, simply because we're going into Christmas. Mm. And over in America, as you head towards Christmas, then companies will need to employ more people to do the packing. Sure. And also the shops will need to employ more people in order to service their clients. So I think, you know, we're going to get another good set of numbers for the non-farm payroll.
Very straightforward there.
Yeah, indeed. So we are expecting some PMI numbers out of China.
Yeah.
And what's quite interesting there, we were talking about this earlier on the show, was, you know, if we do get an expansion, if we get an above 50 expansion, sort of what position that puts the Chinese in so far as they're bargaining vis-a-vis the US?
Well, you know, I think the numbers are going to be above 50. I think we're going to see services expanding. We're going to see manufacturing. We've already seen one set of manufacturing numbers that showed expansion. So I think China is starting to cope with the trade war. But what is interesting is that China is coping with the trade war by introducing monetary easing. In other words, it's just sort of putting more money into the economy. There comes a limit to how much you can put into an economy. You can't keep on sort of pumping money into an economy in order to get it to grow. So there are some strategic problems for China, but ultimately every central bank around the world now is just cutting interest rates. We've got two central bank meetings this week. Yep. We've got the Reserve Bank of Australia and also the Reserve Bank of India. I think the Reserve Bank of Australia will probably sort of sit on its hands this time around, but certainly as far as India is concerned, it's beginning to see its economy slow down. Well, the growth is slowing down. So I think they're going to cut interest rates again. They've cut them five times this year already. So this could be the sixth time it will cut interest rates.
So one big headline out today, the central bank governor, Yi Gang, saying that he published an article just yesterday saying Beijing should maintain normal monetary policy. Obviously, he's being asked over and over, you're going to go down to zero.
Well, I think what he's alluding to is that they're not going to devalue the yuan, which is something, you know, that is worrying a lot of people. But as far as normal monetary policy is concerned, I think, you know, they have no choice but to actually pump prime the economy in order to get it to grow. But the thing that concerns people is, are you going to devalue the yuan? Of course he's going to say no. Yeah. But the other side of it is they can't afford not to pump money into the economy, because they cannot afford the Chinese economy to slow much below 6%.
We're chatting with David Kuo, co-founder of The Smart Investor. David, you mentioned central banks in action, RBA rate decision tomorrow. Mm. Just taking a look at the Aussie dollar against the Sing dollar, it's a reading of 0.9242, down 8% the past year. It reminds me of a conversation that Ryan had last week, and he highlighted how when he was studying there some 20 years ago, it was like, what, 1.4 or 1.3 to the Sing dollar.
Yeah.
Look at how far we've come. What are your thoughts on the impact of low interest rates on the stock market?
I think it is quite worrying because how low can interest rates grow? Yeah. The answer is the moment you start getting into negative interest rates, then, of course, you know, you reach the stage where there is no limit as to how negative interest rates can be. And the problem with very low interest rates or negative interest rates is that it forces people in my demographics. I mean, I am over 60 years old and I have to start looking at how I'm going to be able to finance my pension when I decide to stop work. And previously, you just simply put your money into an annuity, you give it to an insurance company, and they will pay you a recurring income for the rest of your life. But the point is, when interest rates are negative, what then happens to that? What is the point in me working from the age of 20 to the age of 60, 40 years? I get this lump sum of money, and then what do I do with it? Because ultimately, you don't want to take on a huge amount of risk. You can't put it in the bank because you put it in the bank, you earn nothing.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do? You are forced to actually go out and buy assets. And that is forcing up stock markets around the world to points where people are saying that it is becoming ridiculously expensive now. Mm. Singapore, I think, is still relatively cheap. Hong Kong is dirt cheap. Hong Kong is dirt cheap for a reason because of all the troubles that are going on.
Yeah.
But elsewhere in the developed economies, share prices are looking expensive. And I think people need to be very careful about what they buy, simply then just go in and buy whatever they want and hope that it will carry on going up.
Well, we were talking about this earlier in the show. How are these markets continually hitting these record highs and how long is that going to go on?
Well, it's because of those negative interest rates, because there is nowhere else for money to go.
Yeah. Let's bring it back to the ASEAN region. So Thai Beverage has plans to spin off its brewery business through an IPO. It's like IPO season, Aramco, Alibaba. What's going on?
Well, I think, you know, many of these companies have, I'm not targeting Thai Bev in particular, but many companies have taken on debt recently because there was a lot of available money. But they are also mindful of the fact that interest rates cannot stay low for a long time. So if you have got assets within your business, and earlier on when I was speaking to Ryan, I mean, there were two companies there. Wilmar is one. The other one was Golden Agri Resources, which is also thinking about, you know, spinning off some of their businesses. And I think we're probably going to be seeing more of that, particularly when stock markets are high. So therefore, it gives many of these companies an opportunity to offload some of their assets at high prices in order to pay back the debts that they've taken on. So in the case of ThaiBev, exciting, because I think ThaiBev is a very, very complicated business. It's got beer, it's got breweries, it's got milk, it's got soft drinks, it's got property. And I think the sooner it gets rid of the beer side, the better it is for ThaiBev.
Speaking of debt, so I have
You have debt.
A debt.
Like the rest of us.
Funny you should say that. I try my best not to have debt. My father brought me up with this idea that you should never spend what you don't have.
Yeah.
So I've sort of grown up with that mantra, really. But there's a very, very funny Irish comedian who was doing some comedy sets back in 2008, the financial crisis. And he was talking about various countries and how they're all loaded with debt. Mm. He talked about Germany and said, you know, Germany's got billion, and he just kept going on and on and on. And that's what their debt is. And he said, America's got so much debt, it's just a noise. He couldn't even say it. So he was sort of saying, and to who do we owe all of this debt? Hmm. But I think his point was, we keep talking about debt, but we've sort of got lost in it. And I feel like, are we getting back to that stage? We keep talking about how debt levels have been growing and growing and growing this year.
You become desensitized to it.
Yeah.
Because the moment you start taking on debt, you become comfortable with it. And I think companies have become comfortable with it also. But I think shareholders are, again, sort of holding many companies to account and saying that you cannot keep on borrowing money. But the same goes for countries. Countries cannot keep on borrowing that kind of money. Yeah. So eventually, I think what will happen is that many countries will start monetizing their debt somehow. Because, I mean, when you start looking at a number like $12 trillion worth of debt, it doesn't mean anything anymore, does it? I mean, there was a time when you thought $1 billion worth of debt was a lot.
Yeah.
Now you start talking about trillions of dollars worth of debt. When is that ever going to be paid back? The answer is never.
I'm selling biscuit tins. Keep your money, put it under your bed.
I agree with you.
David Kuo, co-founder of The Smart Investor, thank you so much for
your time
this morning.
Thank you.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.